Hey guys, and welcome back to the Adulting Project podcast. Today we have Robert Parker on. Now, who is Robert Parker? Well, he is a hypnotist. He teaches hypnotism and he has a wealth of knowledge around this. Now, we go into a lot of detail. We go into a lot of different areas of hypnotism. And I must admit, when I went into this, I did not necessarily believe that hypnotism was really for everyone, or even if it actually worked. But this guy, not only did he, you know, convince me, but he proved to me. And I implore you to go right to the end, because there may be a little thing you want to know at the end of it. So make sure you listen all the way to the end and enjoy this episode with Robert Parker. Welcome to the Adulting Project podcast. As usual, this episode may contain strong language and adult themes throughout, so please do not listen when young ears are out.
Howdy, howdy. Give me one second.
No rush, man. No rush.
Awesome. I am fresh off of teaching a class. That's why I had to run out for a moment. Kind of had to scramble.
That's all right. You've caught me in the middle of my dinner.
That's fine. I'm going to take a moment to smoke a cigarette, so go ahead and finish up dinner. It's fine.
I'm all done. I'm just enjoying a nice cold one now.
All right. Cool. How are you guys?
We're good. Thank you. You?
I'm doing all right.
Whereabouts in the world are you?
I am obviously in America. A little tiny state called Arkansas. Yeah, if you've ever heard of it, I'm shocked.
I've heard of Arkansas, never been there.
It's nothing but woods, basically. I live in a town of like 1,000 people.
Nice. So,
yeah, it's pretty nice. Like I used to live in Austin, Texas for most of my life, which is like a city of like 2 million people. And I just got kind of burnt out on it. Like when I was a kid, I think the population of Austin was like 500,000.
Yeah.
And by the time I left, it was pushing 2.5 million, and it was just too much. That's too much growth. Not enough construction.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to move out in the middle of nowhere. So I took that opportunity.
That's a big city, 2.5 million.
Yeah.
What's London now? That's got to be 9.6 or something now, isn't it?
I haven't got a clue. I could find out if you're really interested.
No, I don't.
London's round about the same as New York City. It's just under like, it's like between 8 and 9 million. I remember that because I was looking into something like the biggest cities on Earth. They're all in China and India, if you're curious, and it's insane. They have mid-sized cities in China that have 18 million people.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
That's a mid-sized city.
Yeah, it's a mid-sized city. I think Shanghai, it's one of their bigger cities. It has 25 million.
Fuck.
Yeah, that's too many goddamn people.
Well, we work in the city in London. We work in there. You live within the M25, don't you, Scott? And I live as far away from that fucking place as possible. It's not my scene. I'm probably in a town of about 1,000 people at tops. Then I'm surrounded by woodlands and
awesome.
You know,
sounds like you're the English equivalent of where I am.
Oh, it's just pretty much. You walk down the street and you're not going to get shot. It's such, well, you're not going to get shot in England anyway, but you're not going to get stabbed.
I don't know. We have a fair amount up here, mate.
Well, yeah, fair enough. You do live in a weird part of England.
Yeah.
Not for me.
I live in UK's answer to Somalia.
Oof. Isn't that Somalia?
Yeah, just a touch. Just a touch. So you just finished the class then. What was the class about?
I was running a 6-week class with court reporting students on using various aspects of hypnosis and the subconscious to be able to help them work. And when the class concluded, they're all like, can you keep this going? So like half the students a third to half, depending on the week, still come on a weekly basis. They still pay per session to be able to do a group session because it's much more affordable for a group setting. My normal session fee is between like $120 to $150, and it's $20 to do a group session. So yeah, people that normally wouldn't have access to that have access to that now. So
that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So are you actually teaching people how to hypnotize someone, or just how to get the subconscious out, if you know what I mean?
Basically, yeah. My schooling, I went through, there's actually a college that is accredited by the U.S. Department of Education that teaches hypnotherapy. So I taught, I took a, I can't remember if it was 720 or 750 hour postgraduate program. And so much of it wasn't how to hypnotize someone. Hypnotizing someone's easy. It was all around what to do while someone is in hypnosis, all these different ways that our subconscious interacts on a day-to-day basis. Because like I tell my clients, it's all in your head. Like all reality, everything, who you are, the world around you, your perception of that exists only in your head.
Yeah.
It's why 10 different people can witness the same thing and give you 10 different recollections, because we all have lenses and biases and perceptions, and all of these exist within our head. And that's kind of where I come in. I help change that perception. And my practice isn't metaphysical at all. There's some hypnotherapists you'll encounter that get a little airy-fairy, I guess is the word. But everything about what I do is very grounded in science and research. And I very much stress that hypnosis is not a magical thing. It's not metaphysical, that it's a natural function of the human mind, that hypnosis is not something you can or can't believe in. It's just a state of the mind that we're actually in hypnosis naturally a minimum of twice a day, 30 minutes before we go to sleep and 30 minutes after we wake up. We're naturally in trance. It's why you hear about like morning affirmations and nightly affirmations being so important, because they are. They're quite literally hypnotic suggestions that we're giving ourselves. So if you wake up in the morning and you start telling yourself that, oh, today's going to be garbage, it's going to suck, everything's going to go wrong, yeah, that's going to be how it's going to go.
That's pretty much my day every day.
Well, it's because you probably wake up and think, well, this is going to suck.
I must admit, I'm ignorance to a T here. All I know about hypnosis is what I've been thrown down the TV screen as someone's been hypnotized and now they're a chicken.
Yeah. That's actually why I do all these interviews, is because one of the things, as because I started my education as a skeptic, I wasn't even sure hypnosis was a thing. I didn't have any real experience with it. But I was intrigued, and it didn't take me long before I kind of got my mind blown. And then as I eventually started coming into practice and getting experience, I came to realize like just how much misconception there is around the state. And it falls squarely on the media for why that even exists. Because like you said, we think hypnosis, our immediate association is like cluck like a chicken or something like that. And because of that, I have kind of come to detest stage hypnosis, because to me, by all of my work and all of my experience, hypnosis and trance is an exceptionally powerful tool. The research that I read on the things that it's capable of is staggering. And we have these jackasses playing around on stage with it, and it affects people's perception, that people think that it's a parlor trick or at best, or that it's fake. And most stage hypnosis is real. There's various explanations for how it works. And I have some peers that do stage performance because it's good money, I imagine. But to me, it's the things I have even personally done with hypnosis that I have helped my clients do. It necessitates so much more respect than we give it. Like, I have helped people overcome lifelong issues in a matter of weeks.
Wow.
I've helped people overcome lifelong issues in a single setting. There was it's an interview that I did. This is on my website. It has been published on a podcast. I did an interview with two circus clowns and a German spy. And he really was a government operative. The interview, we had to mask his voice. There's no video because we could show him on video. But he had a lifelong fear of heights that he's had since his first training jump. And I'd never met this man before. I knew kind of basically his situation from the hosts. Like, I knew he was an operative. I knew he had a fear of heights. And I knew he got it from a training jump. And that's it. And so everything you see in this interview is fresh. And he talked to the hosts for about 10 minutes. I sat there and I took notes. And I asked him questions for about 5 minutes. And one of the hosts was like, "Can you do anything about this today? Can you trance him?" And I was like, "Yeah, fuck it, sure." And in about 20 minutes, it was all done. I had him fully under trance, had him reevaluate the memory. It turns out that the fear wasn't even his. And here's the interesting thing that I don't think made it into the final cut of the interview is because I took him back to that training jump just to try to give him a new perception. And in the process of taking him back to that memory, he remembers something. He remembers that the kid that went before him screamed in terror. And before he had a chance to process that or react, somebody had grabbed him by the collar, throw him out of plane. And so for decades, because this happened, I think, when he was 17 and he was in his mid to late 30s, he had a fear of heights, or he thought he did. And he'd be going through this with a fear that wasn't even his. So the change that comes from hypnotherapy is sometimes very rapid.
Wow.
In the scope of traditional therapy, it is always very rapid. People ask me often whenever they start working with me, like, how long will this take? Which is not something I can answer. But what I do say, because I don't like the traditional talk therapy answer of it'll take as long as it takes.
Yeah.
What I do say is, while I cannot give you that answer, because everyone's different, I can say that from session to session, you will see a change. You will notice progress. And that from that change and that progress, you'll be better able to see exactly how long it'll take you to get to where you need to be. Because I'm not you. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in your head. Even though I'm in there giving suggestions and such, I still don't know exactly what you're thinking and experiencing. So only you can really judge how long that's going to take. It doesn't take the same amount of time as traditional therapy, because it's more based upon being proactive and results. And that's not to talk bad about normal therapy. Talk therapy and psychotherapy all very much has its uses. And there are talk therapists and psychotherapists that I work intimately with, and we have referrals together. But for true change, if we're talking about how you need to change a way of thinking or a mindset or a behavior, hypnosis is 100% your best avenue. And if people have had experience with hypnosis prior, it didn't have a lot of success. One of the things I like to remind people is this isn't machine based. Every hypnotherapist is different, and the way that you view that person affects things. And so I've had many clients that I'm their second or third shot at trying hypnosis. And I can't tell you how many times after the first time I trance someone, I call them out. And the first thing out of their mouth is, that wasn't like last time. and that's always fun.
Is everybody susceptible to hypnosis, or is it a certain state of mind?
Everyone's susceptible. It's a natural state. Everyone is not susceptible to everyone, at least not immediately. So one of the things that we were taught in class is that 25% of people will have natural rapport with you. They will naturally be suggestible to you just out of the gate. And the other 75% have to gain that rapport. You have to gain that trust through different means with different people. So for example, one of the things that's taught in the both literal and metaphorical school of hypnosis that I come from is this thing called the ENP system of suggestibility and behavior. And it stands for emotional and physical. And we all kind of land on this spectrum. And where we land on this spectrum details a great many things. Everything from the way we need to be spoken to in trance, to the way we learn, to the way that we interact socially and our parasocial needs. And the understanding of that really helps a lot of people. But knowing where someone lands on that also kind of determines how you gain rapport with them. For example, an emotional, which tends to be people that like to be more in control of the situation that you need to speak to inferentially, they need to feel understood to gain rapport with them. They need to feel like you understand their situation, that you understand where they're coming from, and that will allow them to accept suggestion. The other end is the physicals, people you must speak to literally, the people that need social interaction. They, to be able to gain rapport, must feel hypnosis itself. Their rapport is gained by the experience, by actually feeling trance and undergoing it and feeling all the sensations involved with trance. Generally, physicals are, to some level, relatively immediately suggestible to trance because they want to get in it. They want to do it. They want to have the experience. So they're excited to do it. Whereas the emotional, which is what I am, I'm very high emotional, tends to be a little more reserved about it, is a little more hesitant to go into trance, and needs to know that the person understands them more readily. And emotionals are easily the worst subjects for stage hypnosis because they're just going to be a brick wall to everything you do. The reason stage hypnosis exists is because of one of the other suggestibility types. So when you hit in the dead middle of that suggestibility, the 50-50, you are something called a somnambulist, which if you've heard that word before, you've heard it to reference a sleepwalker.
Okay.
And it's kind of the same thing. But somnambulists are between 5 to 10% of the population, and they are the most hypnotically suggestible portion of the population. A lot of times, like if you see people that just walk around in their head constantly daydreaming about things, it's probably a somnambulist. If you ever met someone that's really prone to emotional reaction to a movie or to a fictional situation, probably a somnambulist. And they are the reason that stage hypnosis is able to succeed, because they are the percentage of the population that you can quite literally pull out of a crowd and give hypnotic suggestions, because by the time they're up on stage, they're already mostly in hypnosis.
Already.
If not, yeah. Somnambulists are very prone to environmental hypnosis. And what causes hypnosis and kind of what hypnosis is, because I've talked about this a lot, but what actually is this? How does this happen? Hypnosis is brought about by what we call an overload of message units. And what that means is anything your mind has to process, sight, sound, smell, emotion, anything. And when you get too much, you have a choice subconsciously. You can either go into your sympathetic nervous system, your fight, flight, or freeze, or you can drop into trance. And if you can't fight it, you can't run from it, and there's no reason to freeze up, many people will simply just slip right into trance. And this principle is 100% known by corporations, governments, all of these things. And I have a suspicion that the whole reason that hypnosis is treated the way that it is in the media is because it's intentional. Mm. They want people to believe that it's a mockable thing, because the second you start to learn the map of your subconscious, what subconsciously influences you, you begin to be able to guard against it. It begins to not affect you. And if there are trillions of dollars spent a year on advertisement to try to get you to buy a hamburger, they don't want you to have access to a natural process of your mind that'll make you resistant to that conditioning. So the solution to that is to have hypnosis be considered a mockable or dangerous thing in the media. And what hypnosis is, because I spoke about this being a natural process. Your brain has different wave patterns that are associated with different things. For example, your alpha wave pattern is relaxation, is calm. Your delta wave pattern is sleep. Your beta wave pattern is high tension. And there's a few others, but there's also something called theta. And theta exists in trance, in meditation, in deep prayer. And it is scientifically an unknown state. We don't know why it exists. To hypnotherapists, we feel like we know clearly why it exists, because it exists as a learning state, as kind of a programming state, so to speak, because that's the state that you're able to change your associations, to change your thoughts and behaviors. And that state is, again, a natural state, but it's something that you can learn how to use, because hypnosis isn't just an on-off switch. It's not something that I can just turn on and it's there.
No,
it's something that you have to learn. It's something that it's a skill like any other. And it's not my skill, because I, and it's the funny thing, don't really do anything. I don't have a superpower that I'm giving you. All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. I'm a guide. I teach you how to get there. I show your mind what to do. I teach your mind how to get back there if it needs to, how to avoid getting there. And this state, it's very easy. Matter of fact, I can tell you exactly what it feels like. So, you know, when you wake up in the morning, and it's not time to get out of bed yet. You don't have to. You don't have any obligations. Mm-hmm. And you first come into consciousness and you're just laying there and you're kind of drifting. It feels like you're just kind of floating on your bed and your thoughts are just kind of going wherever they will.
All right.
Yeah, that's trance.
All right.
That is 100% what hypnosis feels like. That's because it's it. That's it. It's nothing unusual. It just feels relaxing and somewhat disconnected.
Yeah.
Because your thoughts just drift, because those are your conscious thoughts. And in those moments, what's called your critical filter or your gatekeeper, what keeps your conscious mind and your subconscious mind from mixing together, is down. And that's why your conscious thoughts just float. Whenever you're in hypnosis, your conscious thoughts just kind of drift around. Yeah, that's not who we're talking to. We're not talking to conscious mind.
You were saying, so you do you're saying you do very minimal because it's something that I would have to learn. So going back to these stage hypnotherapists, they're practically getting paid just to stand on stage and yank someone's arm and say, be a chicken. Scam artists.
Yeah. I mean, so when I say it's a learning process, the first time I take someone in trance, you're going into trance.
Yeah.
But you're only going to go so deep. But the second time, you go a little deeper. The third time, you go a little deeper. And the reason for that is, one, you're learning how to allow yourself to go down that far. You're becoming acclimated to my voice. My voice is becoming associated with that state. And it's a matter of learning to let yourself go. Very rarely will you meet somebody that the first time you trance them, they go into the deep levels of trance.
Oh, right.
So there are, it's, I think I have this on my little fancy thing. Is this it? Yeah. So this is kind of hard to read, but this is what's called the Aaron's Depth Scale. It's a real low res image, forgive me. And basically, how am I over here? These top three levels here.
Yeah.
That's generally all you're going to encounter in like waking up or in the first couple of sessions of hypnosis. And those are the stages where like you're fully aware. Some funny things can happen, but you're fully aware, you can remember everything. But then you start talking about these, which are called the somnambulistic levels. And that's when you start encountering some amnesiatic traits, like you have memory loss. You can't, it's like a dream. You can't recall. Okay. All the way to the very bottom, which you can do surgery on. If somebody is capable of full somnambulistic trance, they can have something called hypnoanesthesia, which is where you can actually perform invasive procedures on somebody with no anesthesia, except for hypnosis. And this isn't a fringe thing that's only happened once or twice. Like this is a thing that is a thing that happens. Like if you have allergies to all of these different medications and such and anesthetics, your only option is to train how to do hypnoanesthesia. And it's a wild thing. I have peers that have experience with it, that have clients that they've taken to a dentist for oral surgery and they just trance them the entire time, and that's it.
Does it have to be ongoing then when you're trancing them, when they're getting the operation? You got to keep it talking. Going.
Yeah.
Because if not, they snap back and it's like, oh, shit.
Yep. So like, let's say I was trancing somebody and I stopped and left the room. What happens? Well, two things can happen. One, you snap out of it. You wake up and you look around. Two, you go to sleep. Trance is not sleep. It is of sleep, though. It is basically the gateway into sleep and the gateway out of sleep.
That sleep middle bridge. Exist.
Yeah, that middle bridge, which is why we talked about how 30 minutes before you go to sleep, 30 minutes after you wake up, you're in that because it's part of that bridge.
So when my wife's going to sleep, that 30 minutes before she falls asleep, before I go make me a bacon sandwich, she's more than likely to do it in the morning.
Actually, yeah. Like if you say, not to give people advice on how to psyop somebody, but if before they were going to bed, you mentioned bacon or introduced the smell of bacon or even the sound of it frying or something like that, it is highly likely that will be on their mind upon waking.
Oh, delightful.
I'm going to try that tonight.
Well, if you think about it, this whole concept, that's marketing. That's advertising. Yeah. That is the entirety of the concept of that thing. And there's this thing that I work with a lot called anchoring. It's often referred to as post-hypnotic suggestion. And corporations 100% rely on that. For example, even in the UK, if I tell you to picture a yellow M on a red background, what do you think?
McDonald's.
Hungry. Exactly. You think hungry, you start thinking hamburgers, you start thinking all of these associations.
Banana milkshake. They never have banana milkshake.
What are you talking about? We don't even have that in this country.
Oh, it's amazing.
That's bizarre. I'm going to take your word for that.
Yeah. Every time I go out to a McDonald's, it's like, can I have a banana milkshake? No, our milkshake machine's not working today. It's like...
Well, it's good to know that's an issue across the globe.
What's even better than banana milkshake? Vodka banana milkshake.
Oh my God.
That is a good one.
But that's just a good example of the association, of anchoring, because all of these corporate logos, all of these corporate jingles that exist, those are all to worm their way into your subconscious. So you automatically have an association. Did you guys have the Oscar Mayer bologna commercial?
No.
The My Bologna Has a First Name? Okay. So everyone in America over a certain age can spell the word bologna because, not because of the educational system, God no, because in the 80s and 90s, Oscar Mayer, the Delicious Meats Corporation, ran an advertisement with a song called My Bologna Has a First Name, it's OSCAR. My Bologna Has a Second Name, it's MAYER. Bologna at the end, it's BLLGNA. And everyone from that time period can spell that word because of that song. A word that traditionally no one knows how to spell because it's spelled weird, but everyone knows how to spell it because of that jingle, because it was drilled into your brain. And now everyone associates Oscar Mayer with bologna. Like, and that's the goal. That's the goal to whatever. And so that's kind of why I encourage people to learn about hypnosis, to learn about that state, because people are like, oh, I don't want to do this because I don't want anyone to take over my thoughts. Well, you're doing it anyway. Like when you walk down the road and you all of these advertisements just barrage you, when you watch TV, you are letting those in.
Yeah.
You are letting it influence you.
I've read a book called How to Make Friends and Influence People.
Yep.
And I believe it had what you were saying, the anchoring points, the copying. And there was another point in there as well, where it was basically like, if you do these three things, they're just more susceptible to, if you're asking them to, pick up a can.
The evolution of that book, it became something called NLP, stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Right. And NLP was created from a hypnotherapist. A hypnotherapist didn't create it, but Dr. Milton Erickson was one of the primary influencers of NLP's technique. And NLP is interesting. I integrate some of it into my day-to-day life. I'm not a big NLP practitioner, but NLP's big thing is mindfulness, being aware of what you're thinking and why. But the other part of it is like that book. It's How to Make Friends and Influence People. And one of the things they talk about doing in NLP is called pacing and mirroring. It's also how you can build rapport with people, which is you start using the same word someone uses. You start pacing your speech like them. And then once you have matched that, you begin to pull them towards whatever you want. And one of my instructors demonstrated this, where he called someone up out of the class and just talked to him. And like, you could see him start to like take up his gestures and things like that. And then after a while, he turned and sat down on his desk, and the guy immediately sat down on his desk with him. And it's, we naturally want to play follow the leader. That's just humanity. We are a hierarchical system. And when we can subconsciously convince someone that we are the leader, they will follow us to the subconscious level. It's not even something they think about. And there's good and bad to that. The other book that exists that really talks about that, that's kind of the nastier evolution of the make friends and influence people, is this book called Robert Greene called 48 Laws of Power. And it's exactly what it sounds. It is the 48 laws for gaining and maintaining power. And a lot of the things they talk about in there are hypnotic principles. They talk about pacing and mirroring in there. And it's, I love the book because it's a history book for all intents. And I'm a huge history nerd.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because we think we're so wildly independent.
Yeah.
We think that our thoughts have sanctity and that no one can influence us. And that's not the case. Funny thing that I've come to experience. If anyone ever walks up to me and says, "Oh, you're a hypnotist, huh? No, you can't hypnotize me." Guess what? You're going down in about 30 seconds. You are almost already there. And it's this odd paradox that the people that think they're the most resistant to hypnosis are the most prone to it. Everyone I've ever known that has done that, I literally get one induction down and they're already just,
wow.
It's the wildest thing.
You saying, taken back, we brought up about people being almost scared of hypnotists, and I must admit, mm-hmm. I'm probably in that camp, mainly because lack of information. I don't know exactly mm-hmm. what they're doing. Like I said to you before, we've seen as Derren Brown, people on stage yanking people arms. They've done one about you will kill someone. And I watched that. What was it called, Scott? The one?
I can't remember, but the scenario was he convinced one guy in a group of people that he'd actually committed a murder.
That was it.
And it was all through repetitive suggestion. Would there have been like a touch of hypnosis in there as well?
Absolutely. And that's terrifying that he did that, because that is wildly unethical.
I think he spent nearly £200,000 on his aftercare. It was a ridiculous amount of aftercare.
Because like, if you convince someone they've murdered someone, you have caused that psychological damage. So yeah, fuck that guy.
Have you heard of Derren Brown before?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. I didn't know he did that douchey of stuff.
They're all legitimate experiments. They're all very carefully orchestrated. He puts it out there and people actually apply to and it's all very
be that as it may, orchestrated as it is. Let me tell you something interesting about the subconscious. Your subconscious cannot tell the difference between fact and fiction. It's the reason why when you watch a movie, you feel everything that you feel during that movie. Even though you consciously know you are watching a falsehood, you still feel that anger, that sadness, whatever have you. So when you take some poor dude, he has murdered someone, you have created a permanent belief, a permanent doubt that you might have done that, by doing that in trance, he made that man feel all of the emotions that a murderer would feel upon feeling guilt for their crimes. And I don't give a shit if you signed a consent form for that. As a hypnotherapist, that is so grievously unethical.
Yeah.
That I knew there was a reason I didn't like Derren Brown. Like beyond the fact that he's a stage hypnotist. It's the fact that that to me speaks to something so wildly unethical that I don't even know. Like
that's going back to my fear of why, you see, I want to quit. As you can see, I'm vaping now. I've quit smoking. And it's been suggested to me a few times, why don't you go see a hypnotherapist? They might be able to, get rid of, the desire for nicotine. And every time I think about it, I go, but what about if he's an arsehole?
That's a valid fear, honestly. Because it is a position of high trust. My clients must trust me. That's why before we ever sign up to work together, I insist on having like a 20-minute call just for me to explain what this is, to explain who I am, to learn a little more about you. And I make sure there's that level of understanding and trust and comfort. And to kind of dissuade your own fears, the type of things that were that Brown did, the convincing someone of a false memory, it's absolutely doable. It requires an extreme amount of repetition and conditioning. It could be considered brainwashing, truth be told. And anything done within the normal sphere of hypnosis is not that, especially for habit control. Habit control is done in the shallower levels of trance. And in those first three levels, you are 100% cognizant and aware of everything being said, of everything going on. And within those levels, if I were to tell you something that you didn't agree with or that went against your belief system, snap you right out. Even in some of the somnambulistic levels, if I told you something that jarred with your worldview or with your morality, it'd snap you right out. And there is a whole lot of the potential evils that could be done with the mind. The United States government has written many reports on it, thanks to the MK Ultra program.
What's MK Ultra?
Oh shit! Okay,
did
cool.
That not consist of? There was a film, wasn't there? The men that stare at goats. Was that not something to do with that?
No, not really. The MK Ultra program existed between the 1940s to 1970s in the United States and Canada. And was a, and this is all declassified. This has been leaked information. I can send you the 1,000 pages of documents. MK Ultra was an umbrella program involving things like Project Bluebird, Project Artichoke, things like that, where they experimented on the American civilian populace using drugs, hypnosis, things like that. They were doing brainwashing, wiping people's memories. All of this
can you wipe someone's memory clean out?
Yes.
Wow.
There is a woman in Canada who lives with her family and believes they're her family because they tell her so, but has no recollection of it.
And this ain't helping my fear with hypnosis.
Well, this isn't hypnosis that we're talking about.
Right.
The way
okay.
that they were doing it, they were, I think, the way they erased that woman's mind is they drugged her for 30 days straight, kept her in a medically induced coma, and played repetitious things 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So while these things are possible, we're not even talking about hypnosis anymore. Like, we're not talking about what I can do, just me and you. This is something that requires a facility, something that is beyond anything. This is an experiment. This isn't even hypnosis at this point. And as I said, after we're done talking, Google MK Ultra, watch a video on it. This isn't conspiracy theory. It's all declassified information. And it's wild. And people point to the MK Ultra program as a lot of the reason to not distrust hypnosis. And I think I could send this in chat. I have an interesting document that is the CIA report on hypnosis and interrogation. And basically, what this says is that if somebody is aware that they are trying to be hypnotized, or somebody's trying to hypnotize them, and they do not wish to be, it's useless. You can't do anything.
Right.
I don't know where this is. I'd have to send it to you guys. But cool. Yeah, it basically says that if you're resistant, that there no one, someone is trying to hypnotize you. That being said, if you are unaware, it can be done. Covert hypnosis is absolutely a thing. And again, it's something that advertising uses. Repetition is an example of covert hypnosis. And we see this in politicians all the time, that there's these words and phrases that they'll latch onto and just every other word out of their mouth, just constantly spitting it out. And that becomes an association. So if you're concerned about being subconsciously influenced against your will, well, you're going to have to stop watching TV, stop going on the internet, stop going outside. What you can do is actually start to learn hypnosis, become experienced with hypnosis. And the myth is that hypnosis is mind control. And the reality is that it's the exact opposite. Hypnosis is getting control over your own mind. For example, with your vaping, stop right now. Stop. Don't do it.
I would love to. Can you? Yeah.
Okay. Why not? Why can't you? You want to.
I do it quite often. And then I walk back into my house. My kids and my wife start moaning. And then it goes back to the original.
Exactly. Because the subconscious association is still there.
Goes, fuck it.
Here's a fascinating story. And I tell this story all the time, but it's still one of the more interesting things I've had experience with. And I have this woman's permission to tell this story, but I had a woman, she chain smoked Marlboro Reds just constantly, and had tried everything to quit, up to and including hypnosis before. But I came to her highly referred. So as I so often hear, I was her last resort. And she tried everything, as I said, patches, hypnosis, whatever happened. And we have a couple of sessions, and I learned that this woman was very, very close to her grandfather, loved the man very dearly. He was a source of comfort, of everything. And he died when she was pretty young. Can you guess what kind of cigarettes this man smoked?
Marlboro Red.
See that?
And
my nan used to smoke Embassy number one filters, tiny little cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the first cigarettes I started smoking for years.
Mm-hmm. Because you had that association.
And then I got to 15 quid and I was like, no.
Jesus.
Yeah, I was the same when I started
smoking. 15?
15 pounds for a pack of 20, yeah.
I was the same when I first started smoking at school.
Wow.
I used to smoke Camel non-filters because somebody that my parents knew smoked Camel non-filter.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember them being in a soft pack, easy to conceal in your school bag.
Yep, yep. And so what we did once we came to this realization is we did a little homework and we figured out what kind of cologne her grandfather wore.
Huh?
And we just put a little bit of that on a handkerchief. And whenever she felt that same anxiety or fear, whatever reason she would smoke before, she'd take that out of her purse, have a little smell, and get that same calm. And what this all says is our habits, be it eating or smoking or anything like that, it's never for the reasons we think. There's a subconscious reason we continue this behavior. And more often than not, we don't even know it. And there's also the interesting fact of the conscious mind cannot affect change upon the subconscious. It's why I say, well, just quit, just stop. Why can't? Why not? You consciously want to. So it's your own brain. Why can't you? Because you cannot affect change upon your subconscious. Your subconscious can affect change upon your conscious mind through the information it feeds it, but not vice versa until you take down the gatekeeper, the critical filter. And then you can address those associations. You can address those thoughts. just like I did with that woman, where in hypnosis, I dissuaded her away from cigarettes and reinforced the positivity of the smell of cologne. And because it wasn't the nicotine she was seeking, as it so very rarely is, it's something else. Because ask someone why they smoke. Very rarely will they say they smoke because they like it. They'll say they smoke because it helps me de-stress, or whenever I start to get anxiety, I go to cigarettes.
Boredom.
Because boredom, yeah. And once that's addressed, once the reason for the boredom is addressed and the association is changed for what you do when you're bored, that is when you start to see the change. To me, at least, habit control is one of the easiest parts of hypnosis. To get someone to stop smoking, to get someone to lose a little weight, to anything like that, it's fairly simple. Because anytime it's an unhealthy behavior, your body doesn't want to do an unhealthy thing. It just views that it has to because of this association. And it's one of the first things I ask someone whenever they get a hold of me and they say, I want to stop smoking. I ask them why. And if they say something like, oh, my wife's on my ass, or my boss says I can't take smoke breaks anymore, there's no help for it. You have to get to the point that you want to.
Right.
If I ask that question, you're like, I need to quit because of this, or I need to quit because I don't want my kids to see me and I really want to. Then I can help you, because the conscious desire for change must be there for the subconscious change to happen. Because your subconscious doesn't work on logic. It doesn't work on reason. It works on signs and symbols and inference and emotion. And your subconscious must emotionally understand why it's changing this behavior. That's why you can't just think to yourself, oh, we need to quit because it'd be a good idea to quit for our health. That's logic. That's not the way your subconscious works. Now, if your subconscious is pursuing that habit because of an existing association, that's how you change it. You change the perception of that association. It's like that memory game that you play as a kid where you match the tiles. Your subconscious is just matching thoughts and behaviors. And you just change those thoughts and behaviors, those associations between them. And hypnosis isn't anything dangerous, isn't anything risky. People like Brown are the reason that people distrust it. And that's why he's a piece of shit. And I'll say that on a broadcast right now. Fuck Darren Brown because of that. Because he damages the opinion. Because he damages his volunteers. Like, you have done something unethical and immoral to another human being. It doesn't matter. If you paid for that man's therapy, that man's always going to have that demon now.
It's going to be there.
And it's going to be there forever.
I'm with you.
On the back of that story with the woman and her cigarettes, I've read a few books on people under hypnosis being taken back for regression, times in the Civil War, and even...
Oh, past life regression?
Yeah. Is that an actual thing, or is it just something that people...
Good question. I don't know. It's a service that I offer.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that endlessly fascinates me, because to me, all that matters is it has therapeutic value. People undergoing past life regression, there'll always be some lesson that they take from it, something that they learn. Oh, my camera is getting ready to just freak out. All right. But there'll always be something that they can learn, that they figure out. Oh my God, what is wrong with you? Hold on.
Technology
indeed. Maybe if we switch this around a little bit. Does that work? Did that work?
Yep.
Oh, wow. All right, cool. We found a workaround. Anyway, so with past life regression, people always learn something, the personal, so whatever have you. And sometimes I'm asked, was what I saw real? And I don't know how to answer that, because by that simple notion that I told you before, if your subconscious can't tell the difference between fact and fiction, does it matter? Does it matter if what you saw was real or not? Because you experienced it and you still gain those lessons. Now, that being said, there is some very fascinating things done with research for PLR work. And it's one of the things I'd like to look into, because there have been instances of people saying historically accurate things. And that's a whole different thing. Because like, if someone comes to me, it pays me for a PLR session, I'm not going to fact check you. That's not part of it. But if we're talking research and something that I have to pay you, which is why I'm trying to pursue getting government grants, that's when you can start fact checking.
Mm.
And I have a peer, probably one of my closer peers, and she, when we were in the academy together, was practicing on her family. And at one point she asked her son what he wanted to do, and he wanted to do a past life regression. And I remember, because she even asked me for the script to help her do it. Well, this kid, who is I believe 13, spoke Japanese.
Fuck.
We call it xenoglossia, and it's the spontaneous speaking of an unknown foreign language. And this is a peer that I trust pretty well. She is of a very high standard. I would send my own people to her. I have sent my own people. And so it's one of those things, like, I'm 100% believer. So why does that happen? What does that speak to, more importantly? What does any of this speak to, really? Mm. Like, the fact that, God, I hate my camera. Why are we doing this? What does any of this really speak to? This, oh, that didn't work that time. This idea of being able to affect so much change upon ourselves, with word. And so I can't really answer, like, what's going on with past life regression? Are we really experiencing those things? Are we really seeing those things? One moment, I'm going to try something here. You'll still be able to hear me, but
no worries.
We're going to, so, like, and that's one of those fascinating things to me.
Yeah.
Because why does this thing even exist? Why does this happen?
Hold on, guys. No worries, bud. My technical difficulties.
I think it's about new camera time.
But yeah, there's also future life progression. There's past life regression. There's all manner of interesting things. Now, with that in mind, there is something that is a no-no with hypnosis. And that is recalling repressed memories, basically.
Okay.
So if you have a traumatic memory that you don't remember, you're not going to find an ethical hypnotist to recall that memory for you, because there's a reason that your subconscious has pushed that out of its mind. And hypnosis has in the past gotten kind of a bad rap in the 80s in America. I'm not sure if this happened in Britain too. There was something called the Satanic Panic, which is where they started thinking that there were satanic messages in everything, and
the most popular one over here, it was Iron Maiden, I think it was. They said if you played the records backwards, there was satanic messages on the records.
Yeah. Yep, that exact thing. Well, they used hypnotists to try to help children recall abuse. And they just ended up altering their memories to be able to believe they were abused.
Shit.
Yeah. And that resulted in hypnosis getting kind of a bad rap within that period of time. It wasn't necessarily anyone's fault, but law enforcement for trying to basically extort testimony out of someone. But still. So it's hypnosis is it, again, it's not dangerous. It's a natural process. And it's something that I feel it's important that everyone not only experience, but learn about because there is so much potential for overcoming habits and for new thoughts, for all manner of things. And it's really nothing to be afraid of. Once you experience hypnosis, once you know what it's like and you've actually undergone it, you understand that it's not anything strange. It's not anything weird. It's simply a matter of trust, really. You give your hypnotist a similar area of trust that you would give like a dentist or something like that, that you trust this person to be a professional to be able to help you whenever you're exposed, because hypnosis is a vulnerable state. Even though you can snap yourself out of it, there is still that vulnerable feeling. You're still kind of surrendering this notion to someone else.
Yeah. So you were saying that habit control is one of the easiest. Mm-hmm. What would you say? Like. What would you say was the hardest, in your opinion?
Grief.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, because people kind of want to hold to their grief, and I've encountered grief for a great deal, many reasons, for everything from death to breakups, and it's very difficult to help someone overcome grief. I've done it, but like it's a very difficult thing. Grief and guilt and shame, all of those things, because they're things that people have convinced themselves are true. And you really have to know what stage of grief someone's at. And to an extent, you're not hypnotizing the grief away. You're helping them through the stages of grief, because it's going to cycle naturally. It's going to do what it needs to do naturally. You just have to help them through it. And one of the first things I have to do whenever there's somebody who's grieving is I have to figure out, where are you at? Because there's five basic stages of grief. Where are you at in that? And if you're very early, there's a lot of work to be done. And hypnosis can help you through those stages, because it can help you process the anger. It can help you process the acceptance or the denial. Any of those things can help you through. But it's a bit more complicated than, like, say, habit control or something like that, because there's so many phases that have to be gone through. I work with a lot of fear and trauma as well. And that can be difficult sometimes. It really depends on what, because grief seems to be fairly universal. People grieve generally in the same way. As to what causes us to grieve, you don't know. But otherwise, it's completely subjective with trauma. Like, trauma comes in so many different varying degrees, comes in so many different methods of impact. And like, sometimes it doesn't make sense. Sometimes the smallest thing will traumatize someone deeply. Mm. Sometimes people can go through war and not come back traumatized. And it's just a matter of perspective. I would dearly love to.
So going on about the old different ranges of stuff you can do, With someone like Scott, would you be able to make him a nice person? Maybe less grumpy.
Less grumpy.
Yeah.
Now the grumpiness comes with age. I've taken years and years to get to this.
It's a
level of grumpiness.
You sure?
Yeah.
I was going to say we're getting on a plane, bud.
That is one thing I've...
Donkey and pay.
Yeah, that's one thing I want to ask you. With auto suggestion, could you get a free upgrade on a fly, for instance?
We're not saying you've done it.
In theory, yes, you can. Let's say, for instance, convince a telemarketer to never call you again, or perhaps convince a corporation that you were attempting to speak on to give you a free upgrade for your internet service because it's been too slow. In theory, all of these things are possible. Not that I have done any of them, but yes. Oh,
of course you would have.
But yeah, for somebody like me that's just got 5 minutes of checking, would I be able to do it?
Yeah, you would need to figure out that attendant, whether she was an emo or a fizz, where she landed on that, and from there use that method of appealing to her. If she's a fizz, be very outgoing and happy and attempt to garner sympathy for why you need this upgrade. If she's an emo, then you just use logic as to why you need this upgrade and kiss their ass pretty good, because emos do love a good ass kissing.
We find out which one you are, Scott.
I'm neither. I'm a grump.
Well, that means you're probably an emo. But yeah, we're influenced every day. Influence is nothing but hypnosis, or vice versa.
Yeah.
And it's simple things like convincing somebody. That's basically hypnosis. Like you are adjusting their subconscious view. And I've been asked before if it's ethical. And that's a weird question, because if you pose that question to me, you have to pose the question to all the multi-million-dollar corporations with trained hypnotists in their ranks exploiting this system. All interaction is kind of based on that idea of association and learned behavior and post-hypnotic suggestion, all of these things. It's everything about our world. Like I said before, it's all in your head. And I have this interesting argument. This is always a freaky thing to leave people with, that if everything is association and learned behavior, everything about you, where does free will come into play? Does it at all? If you have no choice of your learned behaviors and associations?
No, because you're taught everything.
You're just a program.
Yeah.
If you could willfully and of your own conscious desire change those thoughts and behaviors, would that not be free will? If you wanted to change, what's a food you don't like?
I'm not a big lover of fish. I'll eat it, but it's not a food of choice.
Let's say you decide that you want to like fish now. Would that not be an expression of free will?
It depends if he's had shit tons of advertising saying eat shrimp. Well,
true. But of your own volition, that would be free will. And that's what hypnosis is. To me, hypnosis is the expression of free will. Because all of these things are nothing but what we've learned and experienced, and we have no choice in the matter until we make a choice in the matter and elect to seek out to do something about it.
So basically, it's something that we've actually shut down subconsciously from a past time, and we're now up with the future.
Think about when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Kids use hypnotic suggestion and hypnosis all the time. Think about when you were playing as a little kid, imagining things and experiencing them and all of this. That's hypnosis. So yeah, it's something that we almost kind of forget.
Yeah.
Even though it's within us all the time, we forget how to actively use it. A child knows inherently.
It's like that I read it somewhere that when a baby is born, if you threw them in a swimming pool, they would swim.
Yeah.
But as you get older,
you forget.
You forget.
Yeah.
I'll try it on February. Yeah.
Don't blame me if anything goes wrong.
Hey, you got social health care. It's fine.
Yeah. We don't pay for that shit.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, right. We've flown past the hour mark. We're sorry to keep you.
Oh no, you're fine. This is my last obligation for the week until the new week. So
fair play. I mean, yeah, I think where's the most honest place to go to learn about hypnotherapy? Because I'm gonna guess, like everything, there's a shit ton of gurus out there that goes, oh, follow me because I know fucking everything. I'll take your money and teach you shit all.
Honestly, the only person I really trust is myself because I'm going to hand you the research. Yeah. I'm not going to ask anyone take anything that I say for granted. Like I provide evidence for everything that I say. So, I recommend people go to my website. I have resources on there to do more looking into everything. I link out to various research organizations and things like that. And I keep all of my interviews on there. And I really encourage anyone to go to my website, listen to my past interviews. This one will be on there once it publishes. But my website is twinravens.org. My company's Twin Ravens Hypnotherapy and Research. And that's really the easiest way to get a hold of me. If you want to work with me one-on-one, I also do lectures and classes. And as to how to objectively learn the academics of it, so much of what I read in terms of books about hypnosis is fantastically boring. I'm trying to think of a good resource that's actually educational. Because Milton Erickson is a wonderful resource for learning about hypnosis and all of what that means. Because he's a very interesting, wonderful man. He's dead now, but it's very dry because hypnosis, there's not much to say on it, ultimately. Right. When you're talking about just the technique and just how to get there, there's not a lot to say as to what's there. Now, there is something a lot to say about the theories of why it exists or case studies about what went on. And if people want case studies, if the research interests you, I encourage anyone to reach out to me. I have a full package of research that's just from various different places. Actually, here you go. Y'all can have that. It'll take a little bit to send, but it's about 500 pages of medical, scientific, and psychological research supporting hypnosis as a modality and what it can do. For example, I do some work with rehab facilities. And one of the first things that I show them is cultivated research from this thing I'm sending you that supports that addiction treatment with hypnotherapy as a support will see up to a 97% recovery rate.
Wow.
That's quite a bit more than what they're working with.
Yeah.
And it's all the way up to one of the freakier things on there is there is a research report from UC Berkeley Medical Center on how hypnosis can be used to control localized blood loss in surgery. Like,
that's crazy.
And it basically speaks to, we have in our mind all of these autonomic processes, respiration, blood flow, whatever have you, that we have no conscious control over. Yet with hypnosis, by gaining subconscious control, we can actually adjust those processes. We can accelerate our healing. We can accelerate, we can adjust our blood pressure. All of these things that we assume are beyond our control are not beyond our control. And this research speaks to a lot of just how far within our control that actually is.
Going right back to the start of the interview, you said that you went into hypnosis as a skeptic. Mm-hmm. And until something blew your mind, what was that thing?
So I have a bit of a medical background. I used to be a medic for a little while. So I kind of know a bit about reaction and medicine, all that stuff. And I remember the first time I saw somebody get hypnotized and go through what's called an arm raising, where you have someone move their arm from a table to touch their head without them consciously moving it. And I remember watching their arm move, and the way that it moved as it went towards their head was not conscious movement. You cannot replicate the way that their arm moves at that point, because it's weird and jerky and hesitant. And like, you can tell the mind is not the one controlling that, not by its own volition. And I remember very clearly the first time I saw an arm raising, and it was the wildest thing. And of course, eventually I tranced someone and made that happen. And then I underwent trance and that happened to me. And it was just, I can't tell you how many times in all of those hours, I was just completely taken aback by what I saw or what I heard or what I did. And because it's profound, it's absolutely profound. And to see someone truly in the state of hypnosis, it's undeniable. It's not like you see on TV or on stage. Like, you can see your words impact. You can see people's reactions intimately to the words that you're saying. And that's part of the reason that I like to have video, when, because I work fully remote, is to be able to see the way you react. Because if you say a word or a phrase and someone makes a noise or grimaces or like pulls away, you should probably keep searching into what that was. Maybe ask them about it afterwards, maybe dig a little deeper in session. But when you're dealing with the subconscious, you're dealing with reaction. You're dealing with the truth. Your subconscious can't lie. It doesn't know lies. It doesn't know how to lie. Lying is a logical function. So it's interesting, because, and if anything, this is the one scary thing about hypnosis, is you can't hide. People see the truth. Like, whenever I work with somebody, I see people how they are, and it makes it very easy to work with people, because we're generally not shit. Like, people are at a core good, and there's a reason for the way they are. And in hypnosis, you see that. You see all of the ego and all of the consciousness stripped away, and just them for who they are. And at least for me personally, there was something very enlightening and educational in that, because I'm not the biggest fan of people. And I, to be able to see somebody without all of that that they put forward, to be able to just see someone as they are, their basest idea of self, it showed me a lot. It showed me that we're way more the same than we really think so, because it doesn't matter what culture or country I'm working with. Once you're in trance, it's all kind of the same. Once all of those little things get taken away, it's all kind of the same. And it was really interesting to me working with all over the world, because it doesn't matter where we come from, what language we speak, anything like that. Our problems are generally the same. The we are all kind of going through the same experiences and have the same thoughts and ideas the same worries, the same insecurities. And for me, that showed me a lot, because it really showed me very clearly on display that humans, human, don't mean anything else. And we strive to understand each other. And got to give Dave Chappelle some credit, because he gave me this idea in that we don't have to understand. It's not our right to try to understand. All we have to do is accept. We just accept that you are another human having a human experience. And that is it. That is fucking it. You don't need to understand why someone is the way they are. You don't need to understand anything about that person other than they are a person trying to get through life. And that's it. And once you accept that perception, things become a lot easier with people, because we're just all people. We don't
exactly,
once you stop trying to understand why that person acts that way, or why that person looks that way, or does that, and just simply accept that they are experiencing their life, it becomes way easier
to deal
with people. Yeah,
definitely. You got any more questions, Scott?
No, I'm absolutely mind blown.
Awesome. Well, that's the goal.
I've got about 1,000, but there's a whole nother episode in that. So.
Yeah. Well, shoot me an email sometime. Like, if you want to stop vaping, let's get you to stop vaping. There is nothing to worry about with this.
I want to get that free upgrade. I'm going away in September next year. I want to get that free upgrade.
Stop being a grumpy cunt.
Yeah, that's step one. Grumpy cunts don't get upgrades.
So I'm allowed to be grumpy.
Fuck off.
I mean, you're allowed to be, but you might not get that upgrade.
We can accept you're a cunt, but we don't like it.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
It certainly has been. I've learned a lot. I've read a few books about hypnosis, and there's always been that little bit of, you know, is it real?
Until you have it explained clearly, because it's easy to explain clearly. There's always the doubt. I had that doubt. And I encourage both of you to try it out, to experience it, to do one session, do two, do 10. I say it's life-changing, because it changed my life.
Go on then, here's a challenge for you. Could you do it over Zoom?
That's the only way I work.
That's the only way you work. Right.
This is my office.
That's a shit challenge.
It is a challenge for you. I challenge you, Jamie, to take him up on his offer and quit smoking.
Yeah. Well, we can do that. But yeah, this
again,
I want to reinforce to everyone that I work remote, that anywhere you are in the world, you can work with me. So
there you go. I'll do it. You pay, Scott.
Group session, mate. Super.
You don't smoke.
There you go.
Swap.
You can start.
I packed up 17 years ago.
Y'all can trade. Well, awesome, guys.
Thank you very much.
I'll talk to y'all very soon.
Yeah.
Good day. Let me know when the episode airs.
I will do indeed. Take care, bud.
Just before you go, do you want to plug your website again?
Yeah, it's www.twinravens.org. If you want to just email me directly, it's jparker@twinravens.org. So yeah, get a hold of me. We're on Facebook, Twitter, all the standard stuff. Just look us up, Twin Ravens Hypnotherapy.
Fantastic.
Cool, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks, Scott, Jamie.
Take care.
See you around.
Take care. Now that was the interview with Robert Parker. Now I think you can hear throughout the whole of it how interested me and Scott was in this. We started off as skeptics. We've got fully converted. The evidence he sent over is mind-blowing. And I think you guys need to go give him a visit. All of his links are in the description below. Give the man a shout. if you've got anything you want to just run past him, there's no need for you to do anything other than just say, hi, here's what I've got. Can you help me out? Now, the question I've got is, do I keep to my word and get hypnotized on the podcast to quit me vaping? I know I need to, but should I? Would it work? Would you be interested in hearing it? Let us know on all of our social medias. And for now, guys, until next week, stay safe. Hey, guys, it's Jamie from the Adulting Project podcast. We would just like to say thank you very much for listening. But we need you to do one thing. Can you guys take a second to stop and go and subscribe, follow, do all the good stuff? I'll tell you what, I'll wait here for a couple of seconds. Where are you going to do it? Go on, go do it now. Well, I hope you have. We don't want you to miss the future episodes. So once again, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Toodles!